Eichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 23 in the series, entitled Surrendering the Ego to God, recorded live at Eichel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York.
Okay, good evening. Tanya, chapter 6, Perek Vav, page 20, Daf Yud Amud Beis. In the beginning of this chapter, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi explained that just as the divine consciousness of the Jew, the Nefesh HaElokis, possesses the entire range of attributes that make for a functioning persona, intellect, feelings, motives, etc., etc., or more specifically, the ten spheres, which are 10 attributes and character traits, which are then expressed and materialized via the three faculties of thought, speech, and action. The same is true concerning the second consciousness, which the Jew possesses, the vital animal soul of Sitra Achira, of the other side, so to speak, which also consists of 10 crowns, as he calls it, 10 basic faculties, which are the essence of countless millions of ideas, feelings, motives, and so on and so forth. These, again, include specifically 3 cognitive faculties and 7 emotional and functional attributes. And then again, these 10 faculties are expressed and realized via the 3 instruments of thought, speech, and action. In other words, when a man uses these 3 faculties of expression, machshava, dibur, amaisa, thought, speech, and action, to house the divine state of consciousness of the Jew, in other words, when these instruments serve as expressions of the identity, the persona, and the character of the divine soul, then they can be defined as the garments of the Nefesh HaElokis, being as they are encasements and expressions for the identity of the divine consciousness. Then these 3 instruments are defined as holy garments, holy levushim, being that they house, they are expressions of the divine state of consciousness of the human being. If man, however, uses these very 3 instruments to house the vital animal consciousness which exists in himself, serving as expressions of the character, identity, and persona of this element of the Jew's existence, then they have become at that time garments encasing and materializing the animal vital consciousness, and at that moment they are deemed to as unholy garments, being that they are housing and expressing the animal vital element of the Jew's life. Now the question comes to mind: what sort of thoughts, words, or actions can be said to be the expression of the animal soul's identity? Which thoughts, words, or acts of man can be defined that these are the garments of the animal vital consciousness in man? Concerning the divine soul, we have learned earlier in chapter 4 of Tanya that there are specific, particular thoughts, words, and deeds which constitute the expressions of the divine soul. Namely, all thoughts, words, or deeds which are connected to matters of Torah, which are the means by which man may cleave to his Creator, which is the primary goal which lay at the heart, at the very core of this divine soul. Are we then to understand that the vital soul too has specific garments? Maybe we'll say certain types of negative thoughts, negative words, or negative actions, which are the medium through which her identity is realized? So the Alter Rebbe states, no, that is wrong. Let's see it in his own words. The 4th line from the top, at the words, V'hein heim kol. V'hein heim, the garments of thought, speech, and action which express the vital animal consciousness in man, are kol ha-maisim ashenasim tachas ha-shemesh, comprise all the deeds that are done under the sun. Any deed, any activity of man which is done under the sun, in other words, all actions and deeds that are connected to the mundane reality versus the spiritual, celestial, divine reality, all these deeds can be said to be the garments which are expressing the consciousness, the character, the personality of the animal vital consciousness in man. Even a deed or action which does not seem to be negative or bad or evil in the normal sense of the word, nevertheless, the very fact that it's a deed which is done under the sun deems it an expression of the animal soul in man versus an expression of the godly, divine soul in man. Why is this? Asher hakoil hevel ureus ruach, which are all these deeds, are vanity and an affliction of the spirit. This is a quote, as I mentioned last week, of the words of Shlomo HaMelech in the first chapter of Kehelas Ecclesiastics, where he says in Pasuk Yudalit, Ra'isi es kol ha-maisim shenasu tachas ha-shemesh, v'hinei ha-koil hevel ur'us ruach. I have seen all the deeds done beneath the sun, and behold, all is futile, all is vanity, and a vexation, a ruination of the spirit. What is the meaning, the deeper meaning in the words ur'us ruach, that all the deeds under the sun are a vexation or affliction of the spirit? So the Zohar interprets this as the Zohar, the fundamental Kabbalistic text authored by Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and his pupils, writes in Parshas B'Shalach in the Afnon Tesamet Aleph, Shehein Tviru D'Ruchechulu, that these deeds which are done under the sun are a ruination of the spirit, meaning the Ruach HaKdusha, the spirit of holiness. So Shlomo HaMelech is telling us that all deeds that are under the sun are a ruination of the spirit of holiness, and therefore, by definition, they are antithetical, something which is distinct and separated from holiness, and on the contrary, it's something that's a ruination, a vexation, and an affliction of the spirit of holiness. This is true concerning deeds, which is one of the three instruments of expression. Now the Alter Rebbe continues concerning the other two instruments, V'chein kol hadiburim v'kol hamachshavis. Similarly, all words and all thoughts, Asher loy la Hashem heima v'liritzoynoi v'la'avaydasai, that are not directed to Hashem and to His will and His service. So all such type of words and thoughts can be defined as expressions and garments that are materializing, that are expressing, that are realizing the character, the identity of the animal vital consciousness in man's identity, which is from the Sitra Achira, from the other side. And this immediately begs the question, why is this? The disadvantage of these deeds, thoughts, words and thoughts are apparently not that they are evil or bad. We're not dealing with a person who does a negative thing. Let's define negativity as he violates a transgression of the Torah, or he says evil words, or he thinks evil thoughts. He is over here generalizing and including every type of thought, word uttered, or action performed, which is not directly directed towards godliness, towards holiness, towards Torah and mitzvahs. And nevertheless, all of these types of thoughts, words, and actions are expressions not of the divinity in man, but of the zoological identity which characterizes an element in man's existence, the animal soul. Why is this? So the Alter Rebbe explains, Shezehu pirush lashon sitra achira, for this is indeed the meaning of the term sitra achira, by which the second soul of the Jew is defined. It's a soul of sitra achira, of the other side, Pirush, what is the literal meaning of Sitra Achira? Sitra Achira are two words in Aramaic which mean in Hebrew Tzad Achir, the other side. What do we mean when we talk about the other side? What is the first side? Which when we say the other side, we are referring to the side which is not connected to that former side. So the Alter Rebbe explains, She'ein Neitzad HaKdusha. Meaning, it's not the side of holiness. There is Kedusha, there is sanctity, there is holiness, and the side of holiness. The definition of Sitra Acher is the other side. In other words, the side which is not the side of holiness. So from this we clearly see that the definition of Sitra Achira is anything which is not holy, which is not connected to holiness. And that's the reason why Sitra Achira, the realms of Sitra Achira, do not have an independent definition. It does not have a definition of its own which is characterizing what it is. Its whole definition is just relative to Kedusha, that it's the other side. What is it? We don't say what it is. We just say that it's the other side. In other words, that is the definition of Sitra Achira. Sitra Achira doesn't have any other definition but the fact that it's not holiness. That is the gedder, the character, the identity of the Sitra Achira. It's the other side. Hence, if one truly wants to define Sitra Achira, he is forced to define Kedusha. If the whole definition of Sitra Achira is being nothing but the other side of Kedusha, so to clearly have an understanding what Sitra Achira is, we have to have a clear, definitive, articulate comprehension of what Kedusha means. Thus, the Alter Rebbe continues, V'tzad ha-Kedusha einoi ela hashra v'amshacha mikdushos eshel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The side of holiness is nothing but an indwelling and extension of Hashem's holiness. That is the definition of Kedusha. The line on page 20 that begins with the word Acher She'enei Tzadak Kedusha. So that's what Kedusha is. Ve'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sheira Ela Al Davar She'batul Etzlo Yisbarach. Now Hashem dwells only on that which is surrendered to Him. So Kedusha means something which experiences the indwelling and extension of Hashem's holiness. Hashem dwells only on that which is surrendered to Him. In which means that anything which is not batel, which is not abnegated to Hashem's reality, does not experience an indwelling and extension of Hashem's holiness. If so, it's not Kedusha, because that is the definition of Kedusha. If it's not Kedusha, it's Sitra Achira. So in light of this, we have a clear understanding and a definition of what is included in the realm of Sitra Achira. Anything which is not batel, anything which does not surrender itself, which is not nullified to the reality of Hashem, is Sitra Achira. And this is the reason why all thoughts, words, and activities which are not directed towards the divine reality, towards Hashem, towards His will, towards His service, although they do not seem to be evil and negative, nevertheless they are all included in the realm of Sitra Achira, and they can be said to constitute the garment that expresses the soul of Sitra Achira, because since in these thoughts, words, and actions, there is no bittul, they are not characterized by surrender, by being devoted and surrendering their reality to Hashem. Why? Because we say that they assume an independent identity and character. They may not be evil, but they're not directed towards Hashem, so they have their independent veneer and reality. So therefore, it's already not Kedusha. If it's not batel, it's not Kedusha. If it's not Kedusha, it's Sitra Achira. Yeah. Your question is, there are levels in bittul, there are levels in surrender and nullification. There can be someone who nullifies himself to a certain degree, and then someone who nullifies himself to a much greater degree, and someone who nullifies himself totally. So the answer is that every stage of bittul allows an indwelling and an extension of Hashem's reality. True, the greater the bittul is, the greater the suspension of one's own ego and identity, the deeper and greater hashras, hashchina, this man or individual or object can experience. But every level of bittul, by definition, welcomes the reality of Hashem, as it will become clear as we continue over here in the text. Yeah. Is bittul the only quality that brings us closer to Kedusha? Do you know what bittul constitutes? If you would know what bittul constitutes, you wouldn't ask that question. And I will explain that in a moment. Yeah. So what's your question? Okay, you're asking, doesn't Sitra Achira derive its vitality from divinity, from Kedusha, from Hashem? So even Sitra Achira and thoughts, deeds, and activities of Sitra Achira also have some type of Kedusha in them, because that's how they live and exist. That's a very good question, and the Alter Rebbe will address it clearly, just in several lines. Let's not jump ahead of ourselves. Any other questions? Okay. What is the Alter Rebbe explaining over here? The explanation of these above mentioned lines, above lines that we have just learned inside, is elaborated upon in Tanya, in other chapters, specifically chapter 35, and in many, many discourses of the Baal HaTanya. And I would like to share with you the kernel of the idea which is being conveyed over here in light of the explanations of the Alter Rebbe in many places. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, Hashem is one. This is the mission statement of the Jew. He says it twice a day. Jews live with this pasuk, die with this pasuk, breathe this pasuk. What is the meaning of Hashem Echad, Hashem is one? Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidism, defines the true meaning of Hashem Echad. And indeed, this is one of the most foundational ideas of the Shita, of the philosophy and perspective of Hasidus, that Hashem Echad does not only mean that there is only one deity, one God, that there are no two gods. Not only does Hashem Echad mean that Hashem is the only ultimate true master of the universe, but furthermore, Hashem Echad means Hashem is one, that He is one and the only one. Hashem is one means that He is the only ultimate true existing reality. And besides Hashem, there is no true reality which exists. In the terminology of the pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people in Parshas Vayeschanan, Perek Chafei Pasuk Lamed Hei, Ata Hareisa Ladas Ki Hashem Hu HaLeikim Ein Oid Mulvadei. You have been shown, in order to know that Hashem is God, there is none else beside Him. Hashem Echad, He is not only one, but He is the only one, excluding every other reality. But what does that mean? Around these tables, there are many, many people sitting. We have a big world in front of us. What does it mean, Einoid Mulvadei, there is none else beside Him? Chazal, our sages, in the conclusion of Masechta Kiddushin, in the Mishnah and then in Gemara, say, Ani Nivresi L'Sham Hashiskayini. I was created to serve my Creator. The Melechus Shleiman Mishnayis has another version, Ani Leinivresi Elo L'Sham Hashiskayini. I was not created but to serve my Creator. With these words, the Talmud sums up the purpose of life and the ultimate true perspective on life. This is concerning the human being. Concerning the world, the universe at large, the Mishnah says at the conclusion of Pirkei Avos, Kol ma shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'ilam elei bra'i ala l'chvede. All that Hashem has created in His world, He did not create but for His glory. In other words, therein, and only therein, lies the fact of man's being and the fact of the world's existence. The whole definition and true reality of man's existence and of the world's existence is to serve his Creator. And the same is true concerning the world. The true reality of the world's existence is not something separate from Hashem's reality, but rather only as an instrument to fulfill the divine will. In other words, the true meaning of Hashem Echad means that the only true existing reality is Hashem, is godliness. Hashem is infinite, and His reality is all-pervading. There is nothing which is excluded from the reality of Hashem. The whole reality and the whole significance of existence of the human race and of every single creature and force and phenomenon in existence is nothing but a part of the divine reality, in the sense that the sole purpose and raison d'etre of every single reality is to serve as an instrument of the divine will, to serve as a medium through which the divine reality should be expressed and revealed. So the only true existence is Hashem. Every existence is part and parcel of this reality. For example, there's a tree existing in the world, a citron tree, an esrog tree, or a palm tree, a lulav tree. So the sole true existence and definition of being of this tree is that it serves to produce an esrog or a lulav, which can be used as an instrument for fulfilling the divine will on Sukkos. You have an animal, and from the hide of this animal we make parchment. And then we have different things that grow from the earth, that from this produce we develop and we manufacture ink. The sole true definition of existence of this ink, of this parchment, of this animal is that from this man can create a Torah scroll, a Sefer Torah, write tefillin, mezuzahs, and make them an instrument for the divine will. We have time. The 24 hours of Yom Kippur, their true inherent existence is that man sanctifies them with the holiness of Yom Kippur. However, there are those objects and forces in existence that serve the divine reality in a very direct way. And then there are those things that don't serve it mamash in a direct way, but they also serve it, if not a direct way, in an indirect way. For example, the parchment of an animal can actually become tefillin. It can be developed into an holy object, which is the object which constitutes the divine will, a divine will, the will of putting on tefillin. Then you have all those realities like food. Food is consumed by the human being, and through that it fuels the human being and gives him energy. With that energy, he can afterwards serve Hashem, learn His Torah, pray with zealousness, help someone in need. When he helps someone in need, which is a fulfillment of the divine will, the energy that he receives from the food, what that is saying is that the food is becoming part, an instrument of fulfillment of the divine will. And the same is true concerning every single issue. A man lives in a home. The true definition of the home is that this home imbues him with a certain sense of confidence, a sense of life, of tranquility, that allows him to become a godly person and to introduce godliness into his life and into the world. And this is the deeper significance in a very interesting statement of Chazal. In Masechta Brachos, Daf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, our sages say, Darosh bar kapara, Eizu yiparsha ktana shakol gufei Torah tluyim ba, b'chol drachecha de'eyu v'hu yiyashir erchisecha. Bar kapara expounded, what short Torah text is there upon which all the essential principles of the Torah depend? One small pasuk in Mishlei, in Perek Gimel, pasuk Vav, Shleima HaMelech says, in all your ways know him, and he will smooth your path. Why is this a pasuk on which all the essential principles of the Torah are dependent upon? In all your ways you should know him. So there are different interpretations. The Alter Rebbe interprets it, and Chassidus interprets it as follows. What is the true essence of Torah? What is the definition of Torah ultimately? The bottom line of Torah is that it directs, guides, and teaches the person how to reveal the ultimate and true reality in every single aspect of his life and in the world at large, which is the divine potential and purpose that is invested within it. B'chol drachecha de'eyu is the pasuk that conveys this message. In all your ways you should know him. There are no boundaries where divinity exists and other boundaries where divinity does not exist. That's an antithesis to the whole concept of Hashem's unity, of Hashem Echad. Hashem is everywhere. We don't mean only in the physical sense, in the conceptual sense. Hashem's unity means that everything is part and parcel of the divine reality. That's demonstrated by this pasuk, in all your ways you should know him. There is no aspect in the human life which should or can be divorced or severed or disconnected from the divine reality. Everything in some way can serve its true purpose, which is bringing down Hashem in a revealed way into this world, connecting the Creator to His creation. And therefore we say the only true reality that exists is Hashem. There's no other reality. Either is a world. What's the true definition of the world? What's the true definition, character and identity of everything in the world? Its contribution, its role, from the divine perspective where it can be utilized, manufactured, or used in whatever way to serve the divine purpose in creation. So you have a hand. What is so you say a hand exists? Not only Hashem exists, your hand exists. You say no. Hashem exists. Since Hashem wants that a Jew should put on tefillin, and tefillin has to be donned on a hand, so therefore your hand exists. So what is the true definition of your hand? An instrument for fulfilling the divine will. What is the true definition of a specific talent, resource, checkbook that you have? An opportunity to write a check for tzedakah. And the same is true about every single reality in the world. What is its ultimate definition? Not something separate, distinct from the divine reality. Rather, the divine purpose, which it can fulfill, and everything has a potential to fulfill it in some way or another way. Either direct, indirect, as mentioned earlier. In light of this, we understand that when someone conceives a thought, or utters a word, or performs a deed, which is not for the sake of fulfilling the divine purpose, which is not directed towards Hashem's reality, towards ultimate true reality, although it's not evil in the simple sense of the word, it's not negative, but nevertheless, this conveys a perspective. It conveys that the human being, the Jew, views himself and the object which he's dealing with as something distinct and separated from the divine reality. In other words, this Jew is not in tune with the ultimate reality of himself and with the ultimate reality of the object, force, or phenomenon that he's dealing with. By thinking thoughts or uttering words and doing actions which are distinct from Hashem's reality, he is engaging and perpetuating the illusion and the delusion that Hashem is not one. He is actually engaging in an act which builds that powerful delusion, which is an antithesis to the unity of Hashem. In other words, thought, speech, words and activities which are not godly, which are not directed to the divine, which are not directed towards Hashem, are not only not divine, are not only not holy, are not only not Torah-dic, they are an antithesis to the divine reality. They are an antithesis to Achdus Hashem, to Hashem Echad, to the unity of Hashem. True divine reality means that everything has a divine purpose, and that's the true definition. Such a thought, which this Jew just conceived, which does not have to do with this, creates and demonstrates and conveys this perspective of an independent, distinct world. And that's the definition of Sitra Achira. Sitra Achira does not mean it's fighting Hashem necessarily. It's something that's denying the divine reality. It's something that's trying to negate, to nullify, to abnegate, to battle Hashem's war. That's, of course, Sitra Achira. That's a much worse stage of Sitra Achira, which we will soon be discussing. But first and foremost, Sitra Achira means an assuming an independent identity outside the ultimate realm, the realm of divinity. The story is told about one of the great Hasidim of Rabbi Shneur Zalman of the Alter Rebbe, whose name was Rabbi Yekusiel Liepler. He came from a city called Liepli in Russia. So he was called Rabbi Yekusiel Liepler. Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the Alter Rebbe, wished to bless Rabbi Yekusiel with wealth. But Rabbi Yekusiel, the chassid, declined. He said, I don't want this blessing. Explaining that the preoccupations of wealth and riches would infringe upon his study of Torah and his pure service of the Almighty. So I don't want this blessing. So the Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, offered to bless him with long life. I want to bless you that you should have a long life, he says, tells Rabbi Yekusiel. Rabbi Yekusiel answers, he says, if you want to give me this blessing, fine. But not with a peasant's years. Not with the years of those who einayim lahem v'lo yiru oznayim lahem v'lo yishmo. Not with the years of those who have eyes but do not see, who have ears but do not hear. In other words, not with a life in which one sees not godliness and one hears not godliness. Once the Lubavitcher Rebbe told the story and he asked a very obvious question. Is it not presumptuous for someone who is receiving a gift from someone else to say, okay, I accept, but only on the condition that you throw in a few extras? It's totally chutzpahdik. A guy, someone is doing you a favor, he's giving you a gift, he's not obligated to give it to you. So you say, no. If you're already giving to me, it can't be in this way, it has to be this way. You're making conditions. The Alter Rebbe is offering a blessing of Arichas Yom of long life, so he's making conditions with him. What type of life? Explain the Rebbe, no. To Rebbe Yekusiel, to hear godliness, to see godliness, was not a matter of raised consciousness. Or it was not a matter of enhancement of his spiritual quality of life. It was the very definition of life itself. A life which was devoid of this quality was not a life that could have been much better and it was missing something. It's not a life. It's devoid of the very definition of life. It's totally disconnected from reality. That's not life. It's an illusion. It's a delusion. It's not the real, real thing. This is possible independent assumption that man or that the universe is something distinct from Hashem. This is the definition of Sitra Achira. So this is what Alter Rebbe said in these few lines. What is Kedusha? Kedusha is nothing but an indwelling and extension of Hashem's holiness. Something can be very distinguished, beautiful, amazing, extraordinary, but it's not holy. The concept of holiness is the exclusive right of Hashem. And everything which is Kedusha, which is part of the reality of Kedusha, basically constitutes a phenomenon, an object, a force, a creature, which is nothing but the indwelling and extension of Hashem's holiness. There's no Kedusha outside of this realm. This is what the definition of Kedusha is. And now the Alter Rebbe continues. I read this before, I'll read it again. And where does Hashem dwell? Only on something which is bottled to him, surrendered to him. What does this mean? Hashem is everywhere. In the words of the Pasuk, Es ha-shamayim ves ha-aretz ani malei. I fill the heavens and the earth. Malaychal aretz kvaydai. His glory fills the entire earth. So Hashem is everywhere. So what do we mean Hashem does not dwell only in something which is surrendered to Him? Of course, Hashem is infinite, and His reality has no boundaries and no confinements and no inhibitions and no gates and portals that can block it. Hashem is everywhere. But dwelling, when we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sheira, we mean in a manner that the thing, the recipient of that indwelling, experiences it with and internalizes it. In other words, the reality of Hashem is felt within the confinements and parameters and identity of the recipient of the revelation of Hashem. In order this should happen, there is one condition: bittul. Bittul is an extraordinary word that does not exist in the English language. What is bittul? Bittul literally means surrender. It means the ability or the act where one suspends himself, where one surrenders his own reality to something which is much greater than him. Why is bittul the prerequisite for kedusha? For the very simple reason: the reality of Hashem is Ein Oid Mulvadai. There is none else beside Him. As long as man remains in his own shell, confined by his ego, how can he experience the reality of Ein Oid Mulvadai, which is a reality that there's none else beside Him? His very sense of selfhood is a contradiction to experiencing the reality of Hashem, which that reality is a reality which is all pervading, that there's no corner, there's no level, there's no reality, there's no angle or point which is not filled with the reality of Hashem. In order that man should be able to experience the divine reality, he must surrender his own ego, his own identity, his own character. Thus, he opens a channel for a deeper level of energy, for absolute energy, for eternal energy, for all-pervading energy, for the divine energy. If someone makes a condition with Hashem to visit Him and to experience Him at Monday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, or on this day, or this hour, and I don't only mean time-wise, I also mean qualitatively-wise, this aspect he's comfortable with, this aspect he's not comfortable, then Hashem will never come. A God which a human being wants to experience in a manner that suits his identity and his character is not God. It's idolatry. He fathomed his own God, which is a product of his imagination, of his identity, of his persona. That's not Hashem. That's a God that's created in the image of man rather than a man which is created in the image of God. If you're dealing with the true reality of Hashem, He is Ein Sof. He is infinite. He is absolute. The reality of Ein Sof does not allow, does not give room for another entity, for another reality. If you want two realities to coexist, very nice, but you did not touch the divine reality. Therefore, there's only one way, and that's bittul. Bittul raises the person's consciousness to a deeper level. It allows him to experience, rather than his own finite, limited consciousness, the consciousness of the divine. The greater the bittul is, the greater the surrender, the greater the self-suspension, the deeper he can experience the Shekhinah. The more he transcends his ego, his sense of self, the more he can experience the essence of Hashem's reality, which is the reality of Ein Oid Mulvadai. And this is the point that Alter Rebbe is making. A person who his entire life, every thought, every word, every deed is directed towards Hashem, what he is doing is he's opening up a channel that his life and the expression of his life should be permeated and penetrated with the divine energy of existence. If not, if he insists that his thoughts, words and activities should still be confined to the realm of the ego, to the realm of selfhood, then they might be very, very nice. But nevertheless, man does not allow the reality of Hashem to be introduced over here. So there's no Kedusha. That's what Kedusha is. If it's not Kedusha, it's Sitra Achira. If it's Sitra Achira, it's something which is antithetical to the exclusive reality of Hashem Echad. Yeah. Bittul can sometimes apparently lead to neglect your physical needs, which can of course create hazards in health, which creates an obstacle to serving Hashem. You're 100% right, and that's why that's not what bittul is. And anyone who defines bittul did not get the whole that way, that missed the whole point. Bittul does not mean starvation. Bittul does not mean that the person can't function, doesn't sleep. Bittul does not mean that the person doesn't feel, doesn't think, is a hermit, is inactive. That's not bittul to Hashem. That's just nothingness. Bittul is the most beautiful thing in life. Bittul is something that enhances and raises the human being's consciousness, the human being's identity, self-confidence, reality, to much greater heights, to heights that are infinite rather than finite, to heights that are godly rather than humanly. Bittul is not a physical thing where man does not take care of himself. Taking care of a body is part of the divine will. Hashem Echad does not negate the body, does not negate anything in the world, if it's done in accordance with the divine will. Bittul is a powerful, deep perception. Bittul is an attitude. Bittul is a perspective. Bittul is something that permeates the essence of man's consciousness and expresses itself on all layers till his most external deeds, words, and thoughts. That's what bittul is. Bittul is opening up channels to a greater energy. And opening up a window to that energy means you have to suspend your own little finite level of energy. Yeah. There has to be a way to express it physically, of course, a major way. If someone needs help from you, and you suspend your own ego to help that person in need, that's the greatest demonstration of bittul. If someone is tempted to do a physical act, which is an antithesis, and disconnected from the divine purpose of his existence, and he refuses to do that act, he just demonstrated bittul. Bittul is multifaceted, multi-layered, multidimensional. The deeper the bittul, the larger the channels he opens up. The larger the channels he opens up, the more he can experience Hashem Echad in his life. So the Alter Rebbe says that Hashem dwells only on that which is bottled to him. Bein bepoyel mamash. Whether the surrender is an actual one, kimalachim al yainim, as is the case with the supernal angels. The definition of a malach in Jewish thought is that a malach embodies a certain spiritual attribute. There are those malachim who personify, for example, the divine attribute of love. Those malachim that embody the divine attribute of awe. But malachim, by definition, are egoless. They experience themselves as nothing but a conduit to express the divine reality, to connect to the divine reality, and to fulfill the mission of Hashem, to fulfill the desire of Hashem. So therefore, malachim, their channels, their antennas are always up, and therefore they are kedusha. They are reality of kedusha because their reality is constituted of total bittul, of total surrender. In an actual way, they are always surrendered. Bein bekayach. Kedusha also exists where there is a potential for bittul. Kechal ish Yisrael amata, as in the case of every Jew here below in this physical world. shebekoichoi liyos batel mamish legabei HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'mesiras nafshei HaKdushas Hashem, who has the capacity for surrendering himself completely before HaKadosh Baruch Hu through martyrdom for the sanctification of Hashem's name. So every single Jew, even if he does not experience bittul bepoil, surrender in the actual sense like the malachim, but nevertheless a potential for bittul exists in every Jew, and thus a Jew constitutes a reality of Kedusha. As explained further in the Tanya, especially at length in chapter 18 in Perek Yitches, he discusses how every single Jew has the capacity for such self-sacrifice. In the face of an attempt to coerce the Jew to forsake his God, to forsake his Jewish identity, to sever the golden chain of Judaism, most Jews are willing to suffer martyrdom. And not only sophisticated and well-learned scholars and rabbis, but even simpletons, men, women, and children are willing to die to give their life for the sanctification of Hashem's name. So every Jew possesses within his soul the potential for total surrender to Hashem, whatever his external state at the moment is. So the Alter Rebbe is saying, this is why a Jew is holy. The sanctity of the Jewish people, it does not exist because they are more successful, because they are smarter maybe than other people, because of their extraordinary contributions in the fields of physics, and science, and music, and poetry, and medicine, and so on and so forth. The sanctity of the Jewish people exists as a consequence of the fact that the Jews have the ability to surrender to Hashem. It's because the Jew has the potential to transcend himself, to soar beyond his own confinements, to suspend his ego, thus allowing the reality of Hashem to be experienced in his life. This comes to expression in the most conspicuous sense at a moment of a test. The moment of a test, when it's either Hashem or life, he chooses the divine reality. Therefore, a Jew is Kaddish. Therefore, there's Kedusha in a Jew. Because of this Kayach HaBittul, because of this potential for self-nullification, for self-abnegation. Every moment a Jew is a holy entity. So what is a Jew? What is the Alter Rebbe telling us? What is a Jew? A Jew is someone who possesses the ability to surrender himself to the Ein Sof, to the divine reality. It's possible, of course, that Bittul should exist in a very revealed and actual way. And then, of course, the Kedusha is in a much more powerful sense. But every single Jew, even if it doesn't exist in an actual way, the potential in a concealed manner exists within him at the present moment. The ability in the Jew to surrender, to suspend himself, that exists. And from this ability, from this potentiality in the psyche, in the soul, in the identity of the Jew, stems the sanctity, the Kedusha of the Yid. Because sanctity comes only in something which is bottle, either bepoil or bekayach.